The Gecko's Gamescast was sponsored by
Mega Bloks. Mega Bloks. Can you not really afford Lego? These are cheaper and also worse.
What's the Mega Bloks slogan? Mega Bloks' slogan is build them up.
Build them up.
I believe that is copyright from Torbjorn in Overwatch.
Do you know what IP Mega Bloks has sets of that Lego doesn't?
What?
One Piece.
Really?
In Japan only, I think, but there are One Piece Mega Bloks sets.
Bloks. Yeah, look at that. Neat.
Yeah, isn't that kind of interesting?
I think it's interesting how One Piece is just not as big in the States as
but
it
it's
is
fucking,
in Japan.
It's like the biggest thing in Japan.
It is. They have museums dedicated to it and other attractions.
They got a theme park.
Yeah, they got the parks. And
isn't it Japan's largest indoor theme park is the One Piece one?
Yep. And I don't know. I mean, yeah, you could easily say, well, it's anime. True. But
it's like it's such a universal thing there.
I'm just so surprised. I think you want to know what it is. I think it's because they just fudged it up the first time with four kids. And that kind of set it down the dark path.
See, I've heard people put the perspective for why it's so popular in Japan specifically is because before it gets to Wano, actually, it's like the least Japanese anime there is in terms of like hinting at like in terms of like taking from Japanese culture. So maybe it just makes it a unique thing.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, and it's just about piracy, and that's something that's more popularized in European and Western cultures than it would be in Eastern.
So, like, that could totally be
there.
A part of it.
I don't know. How many Japanese pirates do you ever hear about?
I'm sure there were Japanese pirates. It's an island nation.
No, I mean
but
more
I
so
like,
of a cultural...
Well, yeah, what I was going to say is I think the history. Idea of piracy is more romanticized in Western and European fiction.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Well, we're not sponsored by One Piece. But
welcome to the Piracy
Megabox.
Podcast.
Yeah, welcome to the Games Podcast. I'm Eric.
Mega Bloks give us money. I'm rich.
You're rich. Both in namesake and monetary gain.
I'm rich in friends.
Oh, that's nice. Speaking of Mega Bloks, I almost forgot. It kind of, that was very sweet. You're a sweet man. Speaking of, Mega Bloks, it did spark my memory that Lego had announced that Nintendo set.
Yes, yeah.
So Lego announced a set, kind of like the part of the Super Mario sets that they had released before, where you can have this little creepy-ass little Mario to just make noises as you're playing through a landscape or a level.
But this looks like more of a collector's level kind
of
thing.
This is definitely trying to appeal to the older generation,
audience.
Because it gives you a classic Nintendo console that you can build, a classic Nintendo cartridge of Mario, and the most interesting part, a classic television set.
It's displaying Duck Hunt? Or
No, it's Mario. And you
oh,
can
it's Mario, okay.
Basically make this little conveyor belt of other blocks, and you crank it, and it basically in a 360 motion will just keep going. Like in a loop
like,
on
yeah,
the TV
like
as
a,
if something's happening.
Progressing.
And you can put Mario on the top, and he'll make little gestures and laugh at you, and I don't know.
Call you a jerk.
Yeah, and this is being sold. Again, this is definitely for older generations based on nostalgia. For $220. And in the trailer, it advertises, or this little teaser, it advertises that you could relive the memory of blowing on cartridges and putting the cartridge in the Lego Nintendo and then cranking your television just like everybody did back in the good old days.
And I was like, I could just play Mario.
Yeah, and, you know, in the back of my mind, I just really wish they just released the television set because that's the coolest part of the whole damn thing.
Just a crankable television set
with the little
pictures.
Mario on it. Yeah, with the pictures. And because I can tell you this, the last thing I'm going to want to do is pay $220 to get a little Lego Nintendo when I could spend even less.
And get a real
Nintendo. Real Nintendo.
You know
what? Minis.
You know what's fucking, in my opinion, the better toy console crossover? Mm. Remember when Sony and Sega partnered with Transformers and you get an Optimus Prime that turned into a PlayStation and a Megatron that turned into a Sega Genesis.
No, I don't even remember that.
That's a real thing. You could. I think they're pretty expensive collector's items at this point.
Just for branding alone. But why would anybody? It's gonna sell. Well, let's be clear. It's gonna sell out in like 2 seconds. This Lego Nintendo set. It'll sell.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I know it will.
The thing that I think is more interesting is I think this opens up more to the idea that Nintendo and Lego's relationship isn't going to end at that those Mario sets, and I think it's not long before you start seeing them make Lego sets of things like Zelda and Splatoon, because I think it's an easy money making thing, and yeah, it's a cute idea. People are gonna flock to it.
I could see the kids liking those level sets, but Nintendo will actually absolutely keep banking on the nostalgia with these television, I guess, sets or console sets. I personally don't see the fucking appeal of porting a... Well, that sounded intense. But I don't see the appeal of putting in a fake cartridge into a fake console and blowing on it, mind you.
This dude was
literally blowing on it in the commercial. I'm like, I don't know whoever would do that, who says, hey, just like in the olden days, and just puts it in the console and goes, we didn't do this, man. We don't do this these days, but back in the day,
gotta do it. And then I'd be like, it actually says on the box that you're not supposed to do that.
Does it? Oh wait, on the Lego box?
I'm talking about on cartridges boxes. It actually says don't blow into them.
Yeah, but I don't know. I would rather just pay for the television because it looked like a cool little thing to have. That was cool. I just wouldn't pay for that whole console setup.
I think either way, it's a nice display piece.
Yeah, I guess if you have the space for it, because it looked kind of large. I don't even imagine how a child or anybody otherwise would just build it and just put it down and be like, yeah. Because,
well, I think it's clearly a collector's piece. Like, this isn't really a for kids one. Yeah. Like, Lego knows their market.
But if it tickles your fancy, go pay $220 for that. And if you want Eric's smart money move, how about you go pick yourself up a NES Classic and actually play the game?
Go find yourself a nice local mom and pop game shop. Go find yourself a top-loading NES for, I don't know, like $25. And pop Donkey Kong in there.
I just wish if they released that little television set for something more, I'd be like, oh, that's something I would consider buying. Still wouldn't do it, but
yeah, I'd think about it a little bit, but then I would not do it.
Yeah, at least I'd consider it. And then Mario himself, I don't know where they'll go. You know what, I don't even care. Let's talk about video games. I don't even give a shit. So what have you been playing this week?
My biggins have been Ooblets and Ghost of Tsushima.
Wow.
Where would you like me to begin?
It's a tall order. I love you're coming here prepared. You know what? Tell me first about the one thing I do know most of. Tell me about Ghost of Tsushima.
Sure. I haven't played a whole lot of it yet. I'd say I probably put like 3 hours or so
in. The integrity of this entire podcast is now ruined.
Thank you. I really like this game. It is, and I texted you about this, it is 100% another one of those open world games,
mm-hmm.
Which is fine. First thing to get out of the way, this is the most beautiful fucking game I've seen this console generation.
Even more beautiful than Last of Us.
Yeah, and a big part of that is because, like, fidelity-wise, it's definitely as good, but it's so fucking colorful.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about in the past that Kurosawa filter, which gives everything the film grain and makes it black and white, like old Kurosawa samurai films.
Mm-hmm.
I said to myself that if I end up liking this enough to be like, I'm going to do another playthrough to get a platinum trophy or whatever, I'm going to do a full playthrough with that filter on. Don't rob yourself of how colorful and vibrant this game is on the first playthrough. Because, like, just the way everything works, there's so many bright colors popping. The enemy designs are great. So many different armor sets that you can take a look at. And just most of the beauty of it comes in, like, the foliage and stuff blowing in the breeze. It's fucking gorgeous as hell. And the combat just feels really good and really versatile.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good Assassin's Creed game.
Number one, I want to get it, but I can't yet because I'm trying to show restraint. Number two, yeah, regarding the colors, I remember even back a cast or two ago, my mindset was just going to be, yo, I'm going to slam on that black and white filter and just play through it all. I'm not going to do that this time. The screenshots and the videos that I've seen make it just look so visually impressive. just with how all the colors are presented.
Yeah, that filter's a novelty, but, like, the colors, like, I feel like you're robbing yourself to have your first experience with this game be that.
Yeah.
And you can just throw that filter on in photo mode. And I hardly ever use photo modes in games. I've been playing around with this one a lot, because there's so many options and you can get so many impressive shots.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I think I noted, which is awesome, is a lot of the game binds itself around this idea. The setup, for those who aren't familiar, is you're playing as Jin Sakai, Lord Jin Sakai, a samurai from the island of Tsushima, who, when the Mongols invade, he's the last samurai on the island left alive. So basically, the Mongols are out conquering the island, and you're trying to recruit people to your cause to stop them. So you... One of the big things you struggle with early on, like the character does, is this idea of being a samurai and being honor-bound. Like, you know, face your enemy head-on with courage, like, you know, the Bushido Code and everything. And having to adopt a lot of, like, stealth tactics. Because, you know, these would be considered dishonorable, but the Mongols don't fight fair, so you're kind of left without a choice. So you basically have a bunch of different skill branches, from, like, stances to samurai moves, and then you have what are called ghost weapons, which would be things like kunai and smoke bombs. As you slowly transform yourself from this noble samurai lord into the ghost of Tsushima.
That's pretty cool.
It also has what I'm calling the anti-stealth button, which is my favorite feature.
Mm-hmm.
You know when you play like an Assassin's Creed game and you're like taking forts and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Imagine if in Assassin's Creed there was a button when you're approaching a fort where you could just be like, "Hey, I'm here, assholes," and they just come outside.
Really? You could just announce yourselves?
Yeah, it's called a standoff. You challenge them to a standoff.
Oh, that's so cool.
The way it works is a group will come out of the gate, and you hold down the triangle button as they approach you, and if you time it right as they strike, you cut down the first one with a single blow.
And the rest will just surrender?
And the rest will... It'll turn into a fight, but it's just kind of a cool cinematic way to open things.
Right, if you're feeling truly confident in taking it over.
And you can also upgrade stance, so I believe the first upgrade, for example, is if you time a second button press of square or triangle right as the second enemy swings at you, you'll take them down as well.
Can you, as the ghost, take out a few people first and foremost, undetected, and then announce yourself?
Yeah, you could totally... If you can maintain stealth and get out of the compound, you can 100% do that.
That's pretty cool. I like little features like that. That's fun. Especially if you're just feeling confident, a badass, thinking, I could do this. When you case the joint,
mm-hmm.
just pronounce yourself.
Like, just be like, out. Yeah, there's only like five of them left now. I'm just gonna take them head on.
I would just do it when there's just always a single person left, and you announce yourself, and he just goes, "Ah, shit." He just goes, "What?
Oh no, that guy's here." Let's rough
them up, boys, and they're all dead.
They classify quests in a different way, which I think is nice. Like, there are, tales, which will revolve around, like, trying to recruit a certain character, like, trying to recruit this master archer or a blacksmith or something like that.
So it's like getting the gang together?
Yeah.
Ooh,
and then there
good,
are, like...
I love a good story like that.
There are rumors where it'll be like, "I heard a rumor that, Mongols are ambushing people at this bridge," so you go there to investigate. You find hot springs to, boost your health.
Ooh.
If you find a fox den, you try and follow the fox, and he'll lead you to an Inari shrine, and you can use that to upgrade other stats. There's a lot going on.
Are there different weapons that you can use?
Yes, and you'll actually see when you hover over things like tails, like it'll tell you completing this quest unlocks X. Like, one of the first ones I did was a side mission opened up about, like I said, finding this master archer, and it said completing the first part of that quest unlocks the short bow. So I was like, "Oh, okay, I can get a bow. I want a bow. Cool, I'm going to go do that first."
Can you get different swords?
I believe you can. Because it's literally listed as an equipable, but you can also upgrade the equipment you have, and that's armor, swords, bows, and your Minato, which is the samurai short blade,
mm-hmm.
which you use for, like, stealth assassinations.
That's cool. And you could switch between being a ghost and being your standard self interchangeably, right?
Pretty much on the fly, and there are different armor sets that are, some are more suited for facing things head on, like that, I sent you a picture of, like, the samurai armor.
Yeah, that's, like, cool.
High health, high defense, that's best suited for taking things head on, and then there are, you know, ones that grant you stealth bonuses, but they have less armor and stuff like that.
Yeah, because why would you even need it if you're stealthing around?
Yeah, if you don't plan in engaging them head on, you don't need that much armor.
I dig that. I like all that. And this is more of a, from what I've seen, this is absolutely a more cinematic experience through and through.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and also a thing I wanted to note, because I think Sucker Punch mentioned this early on, how they wanted the game to sort of be about the environment guiding you.
Right, with the winds and all the other things that they're showcasing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if they changed their mind on that, or it was just the way they were explaining it, because that is the way waypoints work. You set a waypoint, and then the wind blows in the direction of your target, rather than giving you something on a mini-map.
Can you... Okay, but you could still set the waypoints.
Yeah, there are still waypoints.
I knew this was all... I knew that was all hype.
Yeah,
I
no,
knew
it was all a lack of bullshit. And you could swipe up on the gamepad to make a strong gust of wind blow.
I knew that was all hype. I knew it. I knew it. Not that it matters at all. But I had a feeling that the game would not just leave you to your own devices. That's bullshit.
Yeah, no, it's... The world is beautiful, but that would get frustrating fast.
Oh, for
I'm glad
sure.
That's not the case.
Well, that's the thing with open world games. I find that everybody wants exploration and quest to go back to the way it was back in like classic World of Warcraft days or Elder Scrolls days. And you know what? You find that when you get it, you really don't want that
because you don't have the time for it.
Right? Because everybody wants things immediate. There may be a small there may be a subset of people who do want that because they truly like diving into things, but. Why? If you can use waypoints, I imagine you could. So, I mean, yeah. I still like that, though. I like how there's no definitive mini-map, and you could just follow the waypoints using the winds. It's not like I mind that, but...
Yeah,
I knew
cool.
that was just a popularized little marketing stunt that they were using just to be like, oh, yeah, you know, there's no map, and there is a map.
But there is. It's actually funny to talk about drinking in the environment and stuff. Like, you have a horse... But I hardly ever use the horse because I just like taking my time and like exploring the cliff sides.
And you can you do this like Breath of the Wild where you can break in new horses?
I don't believe so because you pick a horse early on and then you name it and it's like this will be your companion for the entire game.
Oh, that's cool.
So I got this white stallion that I named Nobu.
Can you jump on other horses?
Yeah, you can.
Okay, because I had seen this little anecdote. Someone's like, oh, hey, like I've jumped on other horses before, and I'm just taking them over. And I'm like, oh, hey, I guess you could just have horses.
But the horse that'll always respond to your whistle is your samurai-trained horse.
I like that. I saw the intro where you're riding through the field after a certain
I immediately got
happening.
A great
and yeah, the
screenshot of that. It's such a beautiful shot.
Yeah, that's so cool. It just looked awesome. I heard that the beginning of the game was a little rocky, but once you kind of open up the exploration, it really comes into its own and just makes itself truly enjoyable. Is that 100% your experience?
I think it was definitely a slow start, but now I kind of, the world is kind of my oyster at this point, like I can go off and do whatever I want, and I've been enjoying the hell out of it. I've been learning how the tracking works, because how I explained to you the wind thing, you can upgrade that to make the wind track more specific things, but they do a great job for a game with no minimap of using the environment to track stuff. Like, for example, the hot springs that I mentioned are the thing they boost your health whenever you find a new hot spring location.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, to find like a settlement that might not be marked on your map yet or a hot spring or something, what you want to do is listen for like birds chirping, and then you'll see a noticeable like golden colored bird. And if you follow the bird, it'll lead you to something of note.
See, I dig that. That's some fun stuff right there. That's why I don't even care if you have to find your own devices or not. I like little indicators that help you out like that. It's neat.
And they're smartly woven into the world.
Yeah, they're not too
kind
obvious.
Kind of, like, add to it.
It's not like, oh, like, look at this dragon that's just going to come out and you have to follow. Okay, that's pretty cool.
I also, there was this really dramatic, and I don't know if it was story-driven, because it was, like, on a random side mission, so maybe they just slipped these in for dramatic effect. I did like a ledge assassination where I jumped at an archer and took him out when he wasn't looking at me, and the screen turns white and goes to a flashback of you as a child with your uncle, and he's like, we stand proud and we look our enemies in the eyes when we kill them, and as I cut this guy's throat he just goes like, I am sorry, uncle.
That's very it's very Assassin's Creed-y, where you said the flashbacks when you're killing people.
Yeah,
that's neat. That's actually pretty cool.
I like where it's going.
I love heavily narrative stories like that. I know I'm going to love this game. That's why I want to get
really
it over
like
Paper Mario
it.
150%.
And I'll say, I think the thing that makes it stand out to me, despite it being, again, another open world game, is I don't think I've played another game that quite handles the like wandering Ronin aesthetic quite this well.
Well, I thought it was very interesting because one of the... I like to read into the, just the general reception of some games when they're releasing, rather than outright reviews. But I'd seen that some people, or at least the devs, were considering what type of game they wanted to make because they seemed so gun-ho about, you know, creating a truly immersive and respectful to the history and culture samurai type of game. Mm-hmm. And there's basically the snippet through conversation that they were trying to decide in the very beginning what type of game that they wanted to make, whether it be for pirates or XYZ. So I don't know why, but some people were irked. They were like, oh, so you just pick Japanese because it probably sound cooler and all this other stuff. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I'm like, I feel like if you're very respective of to the source material and you make truly an immersive game that is filled with culture and life, then that's pretty damn cool. And that's kind of the impression I'm getting from this game, at least. So I'm pretty hyped about it, rather than just thinking it's another samurai game or something like
and
that.
And I am playing it with the Japanese VO, which I personally think is better.
Oh, yeah, you texted me about this.
Yeah, one thing that bothers me completely is that the game, by default, the animations are sunk with the English VO, which feels like a weird choice to me.
I think I'm okay with that, just because with this type of game, it would have taken more time, probably, to map or match the models.
Well, the thing was, I would rather they sunk the models to the Japanese VO and had it look like a dub with the English VO.
That's actually why in Sekiro, that's what they did.
That's what I would have preferred, because that was always the way I was going to play this.
The most you could do it in English, I believe, but it's definitely mapped to the Japanese.
I mean,
voices.
I wasn't expecting like Judgment, where it's mapped to both. Where I mean, you and I have talked about this. When I played Judgment, I played it with the Japanese VO because I have played every Yakuza game with the Japanese VO because that's all there is.
Right.
And this, like, it's just that's what it takes me out of that world at this point. To be like, we're in mainland Japan telling a story about, like, modern Yakuza, and I don't know, understand why they're speaking English.
Yeah. I mean, it totally depends on the... Yeah, I think it just depends on where how you're playing it or how you...
Or I think I also...
Soak in your media, because I'm sure that there's a greater number of people who just play both or just don't even give a crap, I agree. I think it's a little strange, too. I think just because, you know, you're having something that's totally... As you were saying, integrated in Japan, and it was like, here's the English. It's like,
and it's funny, the comparison to Assassin's Creed is like consistently inevitable. So I had two thoughts about the Assassin's Creed series while playing this, and the first was, man, if they ever do decide to make a game set in feudal Japan, it'll always be compared to this at this point. Like, they'll have to hit at least this level of immersiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And the second was, wouldn't it be cool if Assassin's Creed games gave you the option to have VO in the language of the time period and country the game is set in?
It'd be cool, but it always would cost money. They'd have to dedicate 100%. A lot of time to it, I imagine. Which is why I guess I wasn't too concerned about that. Or I don't even want to say it's a concern. I feel like I wouldn't be irked by
it. A few hours in,
it stopped
bothering me.
This game is very cinematic, though, in nature, and I imagine a lot of close-ups are going to be occurring with characters, and you're just going to not be able to help yourself but notice.
That's the problem.
It's kind of weird.
In cutscenes, it bothers me. Like, when you're out in the open world, you're barely noticing it on the models when they're just talking in-engine. But in cutscenes, it bothers me.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure I'll watch it, too, and I'll just be like, well, this is strange, but...
Thankfully, I think with the exception of Kublai Khan, who literally, like, talks about how he broke the samurai by, like, studying them and learning their culture, so he's speaking Japanese to you, the Mongols are normally speaking Chinese, and you don't get a translation because you don't understand them.
That's strange. Why wouldn't you get Chinese translations, at least in subtitles? Just for you.
Well, I think it's... I think it's supposed to be, like, a point for the characters, like...
I guess
and
you're
I'm not talking
it from their perspective. Like, it's the true perspective.
And I don't mean, like, in cutscenes. I mean, like, when they're just yelling in combat and stuff.
I dig when a game... I'm trying to think of a game that actually... Other games have done that before, though, where they're speaking different languages, and they'll at least give you the subtitles. And I actually enjoy that just because... I don't know.
It's interesting
fun.
To know what they're saying.
Yeah, because if somebody's just yelling Chinese, and yeah, sure, my character is Japanese, but I'll still want to know as a person, like, what are they saying? If someone's like, oh, there's something weird's happening, or just anything minor, I feel like it'd really help, but okay, that's a strange thing.
And this game does open with a fight with Kublai Khan, with one of those, like, almost the beginning of Sekiro-type fights, where you're, like, wondering if you could possibly win this.
Is it possible?
I don't think there's... I don't think so, and I looked into it, and people seem to be saying there's no way to win it.
I still...
His animations seem to be too unpredictable, and his speed and reach, because he's using a Naginta, like, far outweigh you only being equipped with a katana at that point.
I will still forever not be a fan of those types of fights. I guess it depends on what... You know what? I'll backtrack on that. I guess it depends on what kind of game that's happening in. If you're playing, like, an RPG, like a turn-based like they used to do back in the day, that's dumb.
You mean, like, the end of Disc 1 of Final Fantasy IX? Yeah, like, if you where I accidentally reset the PlayStation while fighting Beatrix the first time, because I was like, I could win that.
Yeah, no, it's that kind of crap, not the biggest fan of, because you could waste your time on it real quick. But in Dark Souls fair, or though, Sekiro or these games, I imagine you'll get beaten really quickly, so it's kind of
okay. To be fair, though, when I think of that Final Fantasy IX fight, I realize now when I was older and playing it that they don't actually let you die in it, so there's no real trick. Like, she just uses a move at one point that drops everyone's HP to 1 and, like, tells you to get fucking lost.
Yeah, which... I get. There's been other games in JRPGs, or just RPGs in general, where they really make it look like you could for a moment before that ever happens. Like, you'll just keep going until things happen. I don't know. As a kid, I when I think back as a kid, I would say, well, this is bullshit. And then in hindsight, now, I still think it's bullshit. So it's not the best design that I ever care for, but that's why I know in the Soul series, I don't care. Number one, because you could do it. But I imagine if I even played in this one, he would mess me up real quick. So I'm not too crazy.
I tried to hold on for as long as I could, but eventually it just ends in you getting tossed off a bridge. So
I'll probably
whatever.
Just stand still then and just let it happen.
I think you do have to survive for a certain amount of time. It might be timing based.
Whatever.
So just roll. Oh yeah, the other note I wanted to make, because I think it's important to mention people, because I did the research after just to make sure. There are two big skill trees in the beginning: parry and dodge. From what I've read, you really should just commit to one.
In the entire game?
Yeah, because, like, before the end of the game, it's hard to fill out both completely. And from what I've looked at, parry seems like the way more useful one. I would get the first skill in dodge, which lets you expand your dodge into a dodge roll. But beyond that, the parry tree is far more rewarding with, like, things like giving you health back for a perfect parry, giving you, like, bigger follow-ups. So much stuff on the dodge skill tree is very situational. Like a strike you can use as you dismount your horse. I honestly can't think of a situation where I would really use that.
Unless you were doing it on purpose.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you were purposely setting that up. Everything on that skill tree seems far more situational.
Right, it's not
a
natural. Yeah, I hear. It's not like a natural occurrence where you're going to say, I'm going to utilize this a lot. Is there a new game plus?
I don't know. Carry it? Even if there isn't, I feel like that's a thing that always gets patched in, like, a month later.
Can you do, refunds on your talents?
Yeah, there is a, you can do that, I believe.
That's all that matters. I was gonna say, because what's the point of doing one or the other unless you could refund it, or you could have a new game plus and actually earn your way to it? Because I'd still want to try both. Just try.
You also might be able to do both as long as you're doing all the side content, but I know that's probably not the case for everyone playing the game.
Right, especially if it's a lot.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what the average playtime of this is. I didn't want to look it up yet, because on release, it's kind of hard to gauge. Everybody's
and also, different. Those aren't the only skill trees. They're just the two biggest ones. Then there are skill trees for, again, the ghost weapons.
So
and
if you truly...
For...
Is there... Okay, I'm sorry to cut you off. Is there a skill tree for... And I'm sorry, main character... What's his name again?
Jin.
I knew it. I just... Okay, so their main tree for Jin, and then the ghost? Kind of?
They're separate. The skill trees for the ghost weapons are much smaller. It's like, for doing certain missions, you'll unlock a new ghost weapon, and then there are 2 points to put into each one.
Okay.
The bigger skill trees are, again, parry and dodge, and then there's also, again, more small skill trees for each of your katana stances.
Could you play the entire game as just Jin? If you want Jin, more Jin the samurai?
Without really engaging with the ghost weapons, I'm sure you could. It probably wouldn't be easy.
Well,
sure
I was
could.
Wondering if, like, if you ever just want a challenge, I'm wondering if you, obviously, besides some situational fights for scripts, you'd probably have to play as Jin for most of them, but...
I'm sure you could just dump all your resources into upgrading a really defensive set of armor and upgrading your sword and just kind of survive like that. Like, one of the first abilities on the parry tree actually allows you to parry arrows, so you could just kind of get close to archers without ever having to undraw your bow.
That's cool. I think when I was thinking about, or at least reading up on the story of the game, Sucker Punch always has a knack for releasing games where you kind of always have a big bad to face off against, or you're kind of building yourself up and facing a big bad.
You always know who the villain is. Yeah. That you, like, you get broken down in the beginning to build yourself up to face a known threat.
Right. And I was saying,
that's what Infamous,
of course, I was
100%
thinking of Sly Cooper mainly, but because Sly Cooper, and also, the reason why Sly Cooper worked so well was because you always had the main bads, and then you can, take out each piece or each head of the bad tree and work your way up. And I imagine in Ghost of Tsushima, you know, you have all your different areas for the Mongols and all these different guys and faction leaders you can kill, leading up to your big momentous fight. In Infamous, was there a... I'm forgetting.
Yes.
There was a big, big bad.
Yes. I forget what his name is, but he is another conduit. That was their word for superhuman. He was basically the guy that gave you your powers. I think his name was Kessler.
There you go. No, it was. It was. There we go. Okay, and that's why I actually like... I miss Infamous, but I like Sucker Punch's games, because they always have that same underlying... From what I've seen, same underlying formula. There's a big baddie. You come out, it's a rags-to-riches story, and you gain some skills, and you just fight. It's like the good old Metroid.
You know what my favorite thing in Infamous 2 was? And this is, just sounds so stupid. I remember one of the, like, first unlockable cosmetics, because in Infamous 2, you have that, you basically have, like, this electrical rod you channel your powers through, so you have, like, a proper melee weapon in that one. There's just a cosmetic unlock super early on to just turn it into Sly's cane.
That's cool. I'm pretty excited to see what the future of Sucker Punch Studios is, just because they've always had this kind of cinematic flair to themselves, even back in Sly Cooper. They always
I bet you there will be at least one more of these.
Of Ghost of Tsushima?
Yeah, and you know why I think that? I mean, this is, this takes place entirely on the island of Tsushima, this game. And it's about, you know, the Mongols invading to get a foothold into mainland Japan. I bet you this game ends with Jin pursuing the Mongols to mainland Japan.
And then it ends there, because he...
Yeah.
Because there's still... I can imagine the story will take you where you deal with the problem on the island of Tsushima, and then you still find out that the Mongols are very much so...
That they've landed in mainland Japan.
Yeah, going to Japan and are still invading it, so you need to kind of go deal with that. That'd be cool. I like a continuation of story like that. Obviously, we trust Studio now. I hope it's not one of those heavy-handed kind of sequels where they're just like, Jin is back, and he's pissed, and he just goes to Japan, and he's just going to all these areas, and you're like...
Jin is back, Jack!
Yeah. but that sounds pretty cool. No, I was just thinking about it. I really... We're truly fortunate just get a lot of these cinematic experiences of games, because they're just so cool. And, I always think about that, again, what we were talking about a couple of episodes ago, where that executive from Sony was like, you know, AAA doesn't need to take 7 years, you know, we could just have quick games. But I think the occasional game like this, it's just such a cool experience to have. It really pushes the medium
then
forward.
You have like a few weeks where it's just in the conversation for so long, and that's what's always fun.
Yeah, and because the expectation is that if you really dig a game, you're going to play through it in a weekend. For the people who are really into it, they'll buy the game, play it. I used to do this when I was younger, too. I'd buy it, play it, all within a weekend, be done with it.
Time permitting,
at least 2 weeks, and then walk away from it until something new happens. And that's true. It's instant gratification. But I think to your point, the true gem of these is that, number one, you can always talk about them in conversation for as long as time will permit. And I think that's one of the best indicators as to how good a game is. Where you can constantly reference back to stories and bring them into future games and try to talk about them for reference.
And sometimes it's about the story. Sometimes it's about a weird mechanic. Like, to this day, I constantly still talk about Shadow of Mordor and, like, why the Nemesis system hasn't appeared in every game that existed since.
Yeah. And that's even why... I don't know. The cinematic type of experiences I always feel like work... If you're taking certain elements of those kinds of cinematic... experiences, it works really well. An example of that would even be, say, where the narration was really strong in Halo ODST. Even that to itself, it was short, but it even had more of a... It was just heavily engrossed in the story, through and through.
Yeah.
And it was just more of an experience that you were going through different flashbacks and experiencing a story to make the full picture.
ODST was... I think that was the thing. It wasn't even about it being... Like, Halo always felt somewhat cinematic, but ODST was a different genre almost, in that it felt more like a BioShock.
Yeah, like it just, I don't know. You launch and I don't into know the how center. To explain it. I promise everybody, yeah. I'm not trying to talk out of my ass here. It's just, there. You can tell that there's such a distinct difference in narration in some games that are all trying to both, A, provide a cinematic experience to yourself, but they're just like cinema. There's always these different subsets of storytelling that I think play out really well in certain games and fall off a little bit short in others. But say, like, yeah, to Halo, just as an example, you have Halo, which is an incredibly engrossing story as you're going through it. But Halo ODST just hits a little bit different, and you're just like, this is cool.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, you can tell it's not the mainline Halo, but it feels like the quality of it in a different way.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that Ghost of Tsushima, or even Last of Us, as you're playing, Ghost of Tsushima relies more on gameplay elements. It's more RPG-based, which I am all for. That's the kind of story that, I think that's the kind of happy medium between a story or cinematic experience and a game that I love. I adore that kind of medium and balance, where you have a nice chunky gameplay mechanic to it all. Not to say The Last of Us didn't, but you could tell it's not like The Last of Us has these RPG mechanics or anything. This one just rubs me the wrong way for the type of game that it is.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm going to love the shit out of it. And I'm really glad to see that it's just scoring well, because frankly, it just looks so good.
PS4 is doing a banger, feels good. Yeah, it's a really cool game. I'm excited for you to play it, more so because, like, I'll probably have a, if I'm not even done with it by then, like, it'll be a fun conversation when you do get to it.
Oh, I can't wait. Just for story alone, I feel like it'll be the type of game that I'm going to play twice, and I usually don't do that for anything. But it's,
yeah,
just,
and that's the type, that's of game the thing. Just, like, yeah. I said, if I do decide to play it twice, I'm going to probably do a run with the filter on.
Oh, for sure. Oh, black, for sure. For sure. I love how everyone's playing this game. I can tell you right now, in social media, ever since people have been playing this game, there's been such an increase in requests for Japanese samurai movies. I've seen so many people going, oh, I really enjoyed this. Are there any recommendations for movies that are based on this? Because they're just...
Just look up the entire Kurosawa library.
Well, yeah, they were like, listen, like, you got Kurosawa. And that's sometimes the only thing that people recommend. They're just like, yo, yeah, check out Kurosawa. But I think it's pretty cool how this is opening a door, being kind of a gateway drug to more media, samurais and things in the medium, or samurai-inspired media. So that's pretty cool. But I'm going to dig it. Now, tell me on the other side of the spectrum... Because this is a completely different fucking game. Tell me about Ooblets.
Okay.
When this announced, I wasn't even keeping track of Ooblets, and when it finally came out, I was like, oh shit, the time has finally arrived.
Yeah, I had been watching Ooblets probably since it got announced, but completely forgot about it until it dropped. I knew I was going to like this game, but boy, did certain aspects of it take me by surprise and make me like it a lot more. Ooblets is another one of them farming sims.
Ooh, my favorite.
Which everybody loves. First thing you'll probably notice if you look up Ooblets is it's got a really bright, like, funky art style and character design that I really love. It's just so warm and inviting. So basically you arrive at Badge Town. It's where you're going to be setting up your farm, and you're offered this free farm space if you agree to help the mayor take care of some tasks around town. So, you know, free land, good deal. So you move in, and the inhabitants of Badge Town and the world of Oob are all pals with these creatures called Ooblets. Think of them like little Pokemon type deals.
Mm-hmm.
They follow around. Everybody has their own Ooblets. When you first get to Badge Town, you join an Ooblet club. I joined the one that is like the outdoorsy people, and so my starting Ooblet was a little mushroom fella who you know, I care for quite a great deal. He's a good friend of mine.
Can you name them, or they always have their static names?
You can name them.
Ooh,
you can change their names. So, as I said, this is a very cheerful, non-violent place, so everything is settled the way you would hope, through dance. So, basically, you could challenge people to dance-offs, and here's the thing I didn't realize was the way this worked. An Ooblet dance-off, your Ooblets, the ones who are following you, go out and they have a little dance-off, but it's a card game. Like, based off the Ooblets you're putting into battle, you have different, cards in your deck. And you play a hand each turn. Each card costs a certain amount of beats to play, and you have a certain amount of beats per turn based off the amount of Ooblets in battle. And it's the first to a certain point total that wins. That point total, again, is based off the amount of Ooblets each side has. So it was anywhere from like 1-on-1 to I've had like 5-on-5s at this point, where a 1-on-1 is first to 20 points, a 5-on-5 is first to like 40 points.
I love the difference. The game just seems so unique compared to what I thought it was going to be. I remember even when you were texting me, you were thinking, I didn't even know about this card mechanic. And you're like, and it's so heavily ingrained in the game. And I was like, wow.
It's the first thing you do. Like, you get there and you get your ooblet and they're like, let's have a dance off. And I'm like, what?
Here's your cards. Let's do it. I think it's just, that's so cool. It's just such an interesting little thing that you just didn't expect. And it's just all different. I don't know.
I like totally. I recently, actually did a stream of it this morning for about 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I opened the Dance Barn in my town, which is a fun thing to add to more of the card games, because one of the main reasons you're going to want to do the card, the dance-offs, is you can find wild ooblets around town, and if you win a dance-off with a wild ooblet, they give you a seed, which you can then plant at your farm, and it grows into that ooblet.
That's really fucking weird.
And yeah, that's how you get new ooblets.
Here, take this seed so you can replicate me for winning. Thank you.
You're just like, excellent job today. It's early access, obviously, so there's a lot more to come, but I've played probably 5 or 6 hours and done quite a bit. I haven't upgraded my house yet, which I still need to do, but I've been planting lots of crops, helping the mayor do things like set up clubhouses for the ooblet clubs.
Wow.
Just recycling, going fishing, you know, dancing. I opened the dance barn, which is really cool because now there are daily dance tournaments.
You just face off against other ooblets for the day?
Yeah, but they're cool because there'll be a random, like, rule change in the dance-offs.
Okay.
Like, for example, this was the most random one I had in one of my dance-offs this morning, was every move costs 0 beats, which means you could just play your entire hand every turn. So you could win in, like, 1 or 2 turns, but if you got a bad hand, you would be fucked. Like, it was a ridiculous rule, but I was like, oh my god, this is such a weird game change. And then there was one where you could only use signature moves, which is your deck has a, like, a base set of cards, and then signature moves are the ones that are in your deck because X ooblet is in the dance off. So you could only play cards that are signature ooblet moves.
That's so fucking strange.
It really is.
The more you talk about it, I'm just sitting here, I'm like, ooblet, ooblet dances, ooblet specific moves, ooblet seeds, all ooblets. Helping the mayor.
Yeah, I love the character of the mayor because one of the first things she says to you is like one of her first tasks is for you to help her clean up City Hall so she can have her office back. She's like, follow me to my office.
Like of corruption or actual physical debris?
Of actual physical debris. Like,
can you imagine? She's like, we gotta drain this swamp. It's getting too corrupt in there.
You walk up and she's like, please join me in my office. And then you go to, like, she's in front of City Hall with like a cardboard box, and she's like, you may have noticed that my office is outside, and also it's a cardboard box.
That's pretty funny. I love that. The other new one thing I love in a game is just nice lighthearted comical writing.
Yeah, and this has that in droves. Like, I think when I won a dance off this morning, like, the last person I beat was like, you know, I gotta be honest with you, I feel like I really got the moral victory here, but you did technically get the other kind of victory, so here's your prize.
That's exactly, and it's a seed, right?
It's the actual dance off, like, in the dance barns always have a different reward, so it might be like X amount of money or like a rare ooblet seed. Also, yeah, there are shiny ooblets. Ooblet
seed for years, and they just like I've been waiting. This life. Here you go.
There are also shiny ooblet seeds, like a color variations and stuff.
Oh well, here we go. I was gonna say, yeah. Where's the Pokemon? Where are they coming in?
Our friend Vinny was watching me stream this morning, and he was mainly concerned about something I had never thought of, which is that the ooblets clearly just stand there and watch you sleep.
Well, yeah, they actually just stand there and just like, hey, what are you doing?
The ones that are following you just like stand by your bed and they're like, see you in a few hours.
See you in a few hours. Like, aren't you going to go? Oh, I don't sleep.
Because like, you have the way the menu splits them up as follow babies and home babies, which are ooblets that follow you and ooblets that stay at the farm. And you can kind of assign ooblets at the farm to do different things. Like, there are things that only ooblets can run. You have oob coops that if you assign certain ooblets to them, they'll actually, like, do a little bit of weeding and watering while you're out.
Mm-hmm.
So there's cool mechanics, and I could see them expanding upon it in interesting ways.
Go to bed, Rich. I'll just watch you. Don't worry. It's like, oh, you're gonna do something else? Nah, I'm good.
no, no, you'll be safe. Just wait.
Yeah. We could I also dance got in the some... morning. I'm like, but we danced earlier.
We danced all day. Yes. I also got Ooblet accessories, so they could wear monocles and safari hats. You know the stuff.
Put this on, but I look ridiculous. Put it.
Put it on.
Put it on and go dance.
Dancer me.
So do the Ooblets just exist to dance?
And they hang? Just exist in this world. Like, you actually, the context they give you is you come from an island where Ooblets were banned years ago.
Wow, this is just like Footloose. This is just like Footloose. Yeah,
and everybody's shocked that you don't have Ooblets when you get there. Like, we gotta get this man an Ooblet.
Somebody get this man a quick Ooblet. There's two things that are banned on this island. Ooblets and dancing. I don't want to see it.
the Ooblets are banned because of the dancing ban.
It's called the Dance Barn, right?
Yeah.
This is just like Footloose. They must have taken inspiration. You go to the barn and they just go, what the hell is going on in here? It's just a bunch of Ooblets dancing. You're like,
but no, everyone in the town dances. The town you're originally from, apparently, has banned dancing.
Yeah,
and no, it's banned Ooblets. I'm sorry. Now I'm thinking it's Footloose again.
It's just like Footloose. They're just like, and
what is this, the town I'm from banning Footloose?
Ooblets. And what do Ooblets do? They dance. I'm banning dancing. Imagine I feel like going to the barn, it's just a big Ooblet battle of dancing. Like, what the hell?
I feel like at one point in my life, I was constantly confusing Footloose and Dirty Dancing, which are two very different movies.
Patrick Swayze's in one, and not the other.
Hell of a performance.
Yeah, great. Robbed. Robbed of everything. That sounds pretty fun. And I'm sorry, how much was it again?
It's $25 in early access on the Epic Game Store, but it's also on Xbox Game Pass.
For free?
Yeah. I love not for free, if you have Game Pass.
Oh, that's right. I love the Game Pass.
It's not on PC Game Pass, though, because of the Epic Store deal. So you have to actually have the Xbox console to play it on Game Pass.
I take back everything I just said. That's not fun.
Which is why I ended up buying the Epic Game Store version.
Because why not?
Also, I still had one of those $10 Epic coupons, so I got it for like $10.
That's great.
Because it was already $5 off, plus my $10 coupon.
Especially for early access, they're probably going to add so many Ooblets.
So many Ooblets.
That's pretty cool. That's enjoyable.
I like Ooblets.
I like Ooblets, too. I like the sound of Ooblets. I had a dream the other day that I saw a Bugsnax on my lampshade. And I just want to say,
was it not a only am I not... dog arms?
I have no hype for Bugsnax. And by hype, I mean, like, it's not like I'm actively looking forward to purchasing Bugsnax. I just thought it was a cute little thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I woke up and I was in a cold sweat. And I was thinking, what the fuck?
The Bugsnax are coming.
Because even the theme song, I never even really listened to that much. I mean, yeah, sure, it got in your head for a moment, but after a week, I was like, okay, I'm done. And then I saw on social media, everyone was flipping out about Bugsnax for like a month, you know, boosting the indie, and I'm like, that's great. But this was the first time I had like a grape, and it had googly eyes on it. I'm like, well, this is fucking weird. And then I woke up, and I said, well, we're done here. I said, I'm swearing off of this shit.
Swearing off
Bugsnax. No more Bugsnax.
You heard it here first.
It's over. Day one, I don't think so. On my side of the fence, all I did was play Sekiro. This is the game that I kind of want to beat before diving into Ghost of Tsushima. No, not because they're both Japanese-based, but just because, I don't know, I'm kind of already in the middle of Sekiro, oddly enough.
Sure.
And I'm kind of digging it before I dive into another RPG. I think that once I play Ghosts, it's going to get me into Assassin's Creed. It was already something I was juggling or considering after I beat some of my games, to just dive into the Assassin's Creed library, because I have not beaten any of them except for the first one and half of two.
And they are so different after that.
Yeah, and it's probably unrecognizable past that point, so I'm probably going to really enjoy it. But I want to start with Ghosts, a non-Assassin's Creed game, just because it just looks like fun. It hits all the right notes in my book.
It's very good.
Yeah.
Anything else big you've been working on this week?
Halo!
I saw you post that, and it was funny that I noted I also played some Halo this
Halo
past week.
Halo 3 came out, and I've been having a blast. I have to say, the Master Chief Collection, just for what it is now, compared to what they used to be, like when it initially released, it's pretty fun. I'm just constantly impressed at how you could have a seamless, interchangeable playlist to just play a certain type of game. I still think that's pretty wild.
I don't know another game that does that right now. That aspect of the multiplayer is amazing, yeah.
I don't know another collection that does that. Because, frankly, in other collections, they would just have separate game executable files to launch in your Steam
Whereas,
library.
Like, in a Halo Master Chief Collection, it's the campaigns are their own files, and then multiplayer is its own file.
Yeah, but at the same time, if you go to, say, multiplayer or campaign, you just gotta tick the box as to what you're in the mood to play. Like, it'll just go. Like, I'm just so impressed about the hub client itself, especially multiplayer, how you literally just check boxes for the playlist that you want to play in, and it will just go. In one client. And then it'll just load the map, and you're good to go, and it'll just load up the graphics and asset packs. Whatever it is, I'm just thinking, wow, that's pretty fucking cool. And, yeah, sure, it may just be a library, and everyone's like, well, you know, other... I mean, I haven't played another game in my time that has just done such an interchangeable, seamless experience, so I have a lot of fun with it. But Halo 3 came out, and I've been exclusively playing that because, you know, I've had fun with the other anniversary editions of fucking at this point. And
did you give the Covenant back their bomb?
Yeah, I am. I'm giving them back the bomb. And, man, it's just a fun thing. I like how they give you all the skins or the armors now for Halo 3. They just don't even give a fuck. Like, you want the Hayabusa armor? You want the recon... Just
it's all yours, buddy.
I don't care. Like, I forget all the stuff you had to do back in the day and slave away.
This is for people that want to play Halo. They're not going to make you plug away at that shit again.
I know, which is funny because, you know, other collections, they do. They're just like, you wanted the game, here it is, but you know what you got to do for it. But
it's a choice. I mean, I'm sure in Halo Infinite, we're going to have to slave away.
It's made me more excited for Halo Infinite. I'm opening my interest doors of Halo just slightly. I'm creaking open the ancient door for a moment just to take a peek as to what Halo Infinite's going to look like, because I swore off of... Once Bungie left, I swore off of Halo forever. Said it's not going to be as good. Don't worry about it. I'm not going to give somebody else a chance. Halo 4 was a perfect indicator that I was correct on that gamble. Did not care. 5, also, eh. Now with Infinite, though, I've heard that it's going to be a little open world. It's going to be interesting. ODST was a little open world, so I'm kind of down with that. And they're going to be showcasing it. I believe it's this week during the game showcase.
Yeah.
And apparently they are advertising the ever-living hell out of this. They're saying, hey, listen, it's Halo time, because that's all I got. And I'm like, hell yeah.
They come
yeah.
to my house, they said it's Halo time, and they start jumping on the couch.
Hell yeah. I think it's so interesting, though, because Phil Spencer does say time and time again, even more recently, confirming that there are not going to be any true exclusives to the newer consoles for Series X. But I am still just as interested to see what Microsoft
also,
and Xbox have gotten a hold of to showcase during the game showcase that's going to be different than what PlayStation has already shown. So
totally. And I am allowing myself to be intrigued by the possibility of a new Halo. So.
It'll be good. I have a feeling that 343 learned over the past 2 iterations. They went back to the drawing board. Let's see. I'm kind of open to just seeing it. If I find out, if I even hear a little inkling, if I even get an inkling that this story is ass, I'm not bothering. I can't do it.
I already told you that.
I'm kind of
Mega Bloks
buying games for solely multiplayer. I kind of want to play the whole package.
Our sponsor, Mega Bloks, may have spoiled a certain character's fate via a Mega Bloks set.
Mm. Just like Star Wars. But I'm kind of down with that, so I'm really interested in it. And yeah, for right now, I just keep playing more Halo. It was so funny because our friend Vinny also, we were playing Halo on, I think it was Friday night. He was just like, this game is such ass. I was laughing so because we were not doing well at all. And there's just some pieces of the game that are just straight up unfair. And that's just the way it is. And he was like, he goes, I don't even know what I was thinking back in the day when I thought this was the Holy Grail. He goes, this game's like ass.
The Holy Grail was different back then.
It was different. But... And I still think the game, first of all, if you're not playing it on PC, nah. A game is smooth as butter on a PC with 60 FPS. It's insane. And I heavily enjoy it. I'm hoping to God that Infinite releases for PC. I was going to say PS5. For PC.
It will.
Around the same time that it releases for
PC. I think it's going to be same day.
I think
they're beyond
so
that bullshit.
But I'm hoping it is, because I'm only in for that. I adore the Series X console design of its simplicity. I don't care what anybody will ever tell me, but... I hope it's for PC, because I already have it, and let's go.
I'll do that as a quick segue to my last thing, just because you mentioned playing Halo with Vinny. Last night, I played a game with Vinny.
What's Vinny doing?
We played Diddy Kong Racing on Parsec.
How was it?
Surprisingly smooth once we got Parsec to work, and we figured out what we were doing wrong in the past, like, 4 times we tried. As far as, like, permissions for controller mapping and stuff. For those who are unfamiliar, Parsec is a free program that lets you remotely control somebody else's PC and streams in real time to that person. So basically, I plug a controller into my PC here, and Vinny's computer displays his monitor to me and makes his computer think my controller is plugged in there. So we can play local multiplayer games together. And he fired up Project 64 through that, which is an N64 emulator. And we played a smooth-as-hell-looking Diddy Kong Racing on Xbox controllers, and it felt fantastic.
Did you win even a single race?
I won quite a few after we warmed up.
That probably took a blow to his ego.
It for sure did. He was getting
okay. He needed to be knocked down a peg or two. He was getting too full of himself.
It's not like he didn't beat me ever. Like, he probably still won more than I did, but I won a handful.
No, I'm just saying, because the last time I played, yeah, sure, he beat me every time. His fucking head inflated to ridiculous proportions. He's like, I am the Diddy Kong Racing Master. I said, how dare you?
Here's what I got to tell you. Here's what you got to do. Because it took me a little bit to get warmed up. But you got to play with us on Parsec. Because once you got this smooth-ass picture for Diddy Kong Racing with, like, no latency, and you're playing it on a controller that doesn't feel like ass, it's a new game.
It's a new world. I was even thinking of all the unused characters that Nintendo... I remember we were joking about that, too. Like, Tip Top and all the other unused characters that Nintendo pretty much proceeded with. Out of all of them, they were just like, yeah, we're going to take a...
My name's
Banjo
Bubba.
And Conker. Fuck all the rest of this, because this is just terrible.
Oh, and they took... And Conker.
Well, yeah, and Conker. But I think they already had Conker prior to that, though.
Was Conker's Bad Fur Day before Diddy Kong Racing?
No. That was after. Because that was still PC... Conker... It was PC Conker, Friendly Kid, Friendly Conker, and then it was Bad Fur Day, and then it was like Conker Fully Reloaded or whatever the hell they released on Xbox and all that. Like,
whatever that nonsense was.
After that.
After he fought literal shit.
I've never looked up the history, actually. I'm probably going to do that, actually, now this week.
Next week is a Conker history podcast.
Because I was so curious as to when the turning point happened and then why, but also how they just continued onward for that. Because once you tarnish the image... You can't go back.
You can't go back to the kid-friendly
character. You kind of opened Pandora's box on that one. And I don't even think we've ever had... I still don't think anybody's ever done what they did with Conker. They just made him an absolute ass and made it like a rated R type of game. And they never went back from it.
Not from a character that had already been established as a kid-friendly thing. Like, there are games that are that like raunchy mascot platformer. Like, there are like the Tiny Tanks of the world.
Yeah, but they started off like that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like they took Mario and put him in GTA, as everybody's ever joked, and they made it serious. They were just like, yeah, this is it.
I mean, I'd play that, but...
I'd play the hell out of it. I also, speaking of Mario, I played... Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's a big fucking lie. I watched some Paper Mario.
Can I tell you, I'm a liar about trying to avoid spending money, and I also bought Paper Mario, and I didn't play much, but I did start it.
We had a conversation about this.
Yeah, I lied to everyone.
To who? You're only lying to yourself.
Yeah, I know. Honestly, it was like, I just like, well, it's not like I'm hurting for cash right now. And I
mean, if you want it, you want it. Go for it.
And my main argument to myself mentally was, I'm back in the busy season at work, as it were. So I don't really have time for a long lunch break anymore. So I can just spare like 30 minutes to play my Switch in my car.
Why not? From what I've watched a few hours of Paper Mario. My older brother is streaming it. And I'm definitely going to pick that up.
Dude, I fucking squealed it. Literally, that picture I posted in one of our group chats, it's like one of Luigi's first lines in the game. When you pull up to the castle in the go-kart, and Luigi lets you out, and he goes, I'm gonna go park the cart, I don't want to tip the valet.
Yeah, and he literally just, like, the second, that pretty much set the entire tone. Speaking of earlier, when I was saying I love lighthearted, just witty, clean writing, Paper Mario literally, and just the Mario RPG world, literally exists just for that. I always give props to Nintendo's writers because they are able to write the most punny, cleanest dialogue I've ever experienced in a game that just always gives me a lighthearted chuckle because it just it does almost what everybody loves about like SpongeBob. It teeters on an edge of giving a reference for adults while still very much being for kids.
Yeah.
And it doesn't miss a beat. It doesn't go over your head. It's all just pretty much out there in the open. They give you the worst puns imaginable. And you just have no choice but to just appreciate and laugh every time. I just think it's hilarious. There was one time there was a Shy Guy. It was a Shy Guy shop. And Mario goes up to him and he's literally like, hey, he goes, just keep it down. I'm trying to also sell alcohol on the side here and I don't want to get caught. And I'm thinking, what the fuck? Like, it's just so funny. He's just running a little speakeasy. And he goes, anyways, I can give you, like, a latte or something if you want. Because it's a cafe.
Yeah.
But, and I'm just like, what?
There's like, okay? There's a great line from a toad in this one that I really like, which you've probably seen. There's a mechanic, which is part of the whole origami aesthetic, where you can, like, unfold things to reveal hidden stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I saved a toad who was folded in a wall. And then later on, I found him in town. He's like, hey, Mario, do you remember me? You saved me. I was stuck behind that wall, and you rescued me so I could work 18-hour days in the shop. What can I help you with?
Yeah, and there was even one where you beat a bunch of Bowser's minions, or rather just the Goombas and everything, and they literally, at the end, when you beat them all, they just go, well, looks like we're going to have to take the L on this one, boys. And, like, that's the line. Like, that's the sentence. And I was just thinking, that's so... It's just so funny. It's just so dumb. And you're just thinking, what?
The first combat encounter of the game, you get attacked by an origami Goomba, and then you go into the combat encounter, and there's four of them, and a word bubble just pops up, and he goes, where did you guys come from?
They're always just so... The comedy writing in that is always just so in your face and so self-aware that you just always have a little giggle from that. And
yeah,
even like saying when you find that toad, I know they took screenshots of it. There was the toad that you find, and he goes, "Oh man," he goes, "is this like my origin story? Is this what Luigi had to do?" He goes, "Am I like the Luigi of toads?" He goes, "Well," he goes, "I might as well just ease into it full force and just buy a hat and a mustache and talk in a funny way." And I was just like, "I can't. I'm like, I can't do this anymore."
This is my origin story.
It just seemed like, yeah, it was just so funny, and I'm just watching all of it, and I'm like, yeah, I gotta get this game, even just for riding alone. And the puzzle mechanics, they looked a little bit simple in the beginning, and they started to get a little bit more complex, but it just looked like it was enough.
I haven't played
to
enough
hold
to
me over.
See how complicated it gets, but the few battles I have done, I'm like, okay, I could see this getting really interesting, and it does feel gratifying when you get everything kind of perfect.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a turning point, maybe, depending on how you are, where maybe like halfway through the game, you're going to get probably the most complex mechanics integrated.
I also haven't
gotten
to a boss fight yet, so I'm wondering what they do to spice stuff like that.
I'm sure those
up.
Are going to be the ones that really are going to spice it, but I'm more so thinking about like the in-betweens besides, obviously, the unique boss fights. I'm sure there's going to be a point, maybe halfway, where you're introduced to pretty much everything that the battle system has to offer mechanically. And
yeah,
you probably just have to play the rest of the game just dealing with the same stuff. And I could see that getting a little boring, but honestly, if the story writing is just that tight, and number two, the environments are just so, continue to just be so fun and just vibrant and just neat and interesting, I don't care. It could sell me for the entire
time.
And
we've talked about it a lot on this show. I really hope they continue with Luigi's writing is always so great in these games.
All of it is.
Like,
all of
when,
it is. It's
when
so
you get
good.
Locked with him in the castle in the beginning, he's like panicking. He's like, all right, calm down, Luigi. What do you normally do in situations like this? And he goes, you look for Mario. And then he just turns to you and goes, oh no, you're already here.
Yeah, and Luigi, even in the very beginning, goes, I guess I'm just going to go investigate and try to, you know, figure things out. He goes, I feel like that's something like you would do, you know? And he just walks off, and you're just like, what?
What are you doing, man? Yeah.
Because it's a little bit different than the Alpha Dream Mario and Luigi series, where everyone's like, this is what I was talking about even last time. I was hoping it's just not another game where they're just like, yo, everybody, Luigi's a piece of shit. Let's laugh at him. And everyone just laughs at him. And in the Mario and Luigi games, he would just take it. Like, it was just solely reactionary. He would always just be bummed out or something. You're like, well, this is depressing.
Also,
but in this one, he actually has his own snappy dialogue. He plays right into it, and you're just thinking, this is the type of stuff
this
I like to see.
This is a fun Luigi.
Yeah, it's not just punching this dude in the gut and watching him be sad. He's like, oh, well, you know, I'm not that great, but I'm trying out here.
There's also a great bit in, like, that first hour where when the castle flies away, you see Luigi's hat land, and the origami character who gets introduced that you're with, he goes, by the way, we should probably check out that rubble. Don't think I didn't see that hat in the rubble. And he's like, that hat, it's your hat's brother, isn't it? We should also probably see if Luigi's alive.
I love it. And you're just like, oh shit, yeah, what about him? They even had a singing, they even had like fun little singing segments with trees and all this. And I just dig it so far. I saw one thing though. This is why I'm endlessly curious about it for later. I saw that Birdo is in the game.
Oh, I already got past that
point
where
rescue
you launched
Birdo.
The Birdo into the spring, yeah.
Does she ever come back?
I haven't, like, literally that's about, I maybe played another 30 minutes after that.
This is fucking, so. This is what I'm talking, this is fucking absurd. Like, Birdo is Birdo, and you rescue Birdo, it's a whole big thing, she winks at you, she just runs off. Like, she's just like, she's not even a character in Mario's World, she's just some fucking wildlife or something. I'm like, that's Birdo. I'm like, what are you going to do with her?
Where are you going, Birdo?
Yeah, I'm like, is she coming as a companion or something? It's like, no, you never see her again. I'm just like, all right, that's fine.
Maybe you do, though. Maybe you do.
Who's to say? Who's to say? I'm waiting for a Paper Wario to make an appearance one day.
I remember wearing the Wario skin in Thousand Year Door.
Yeah, but I mean like a true, like,
Wario. I know what you mean.
Like, I have a feeling that'd just be fun. But otherwise, that looks like a fun, enjoyable game. I know people are concerned about the battle system. I think it's pretty good. It's a different type of game. It's not a true RPG. It's, you know, levels and all that, but yeah. It's still
But it has RPG enjoyable. Mechanics.
Yeah. Which, it all depends on what you're looking for in an RPG. It is technically one, though, with some puzzles. So, a lot of fun there. I'm glad to just see that that's there. In the release, there's nothing really coming out for right now.
No, small one. I'll just run through it real quick.
Yeah.
Into the Radius comes to PC July 20th. Rock of Ages 3, Make and Break comes to PC, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and Stadia on July 21st. Carrion comes to PC, Xbox One, and Switch on July 23rd. Dying Light Hellraid DLC comes to PC, PS4, Xbox One on July 23rd, and Roki comes to PC on July 23rd.
Every time I see Dying Light, I'm just reminded that that game still just has content being released for itself.
Interesting fact about this last piece of DLC for Dying Light, it was originally actually supposed to be its own standalone game, but it was going to get scrapped because of funding issues, so they are releasing it as a DLC for Dying Light, where you get sucked into an arcade machine.
Oh, so they're just releasing what they have at the very least?
Like, apparently it's enough that it's, like, really... It's a solid amount of content, but they're billing it as, like, this little side expansion story for Dying Light now.
Cool. I wonder if they're gonna have a... I guess they won't have a tried and true sequel, because... Well, because they transferred this DLC to the game. That's cool, though.
Yeah.
Not a lot of new stuff. Literally just... From what I've learned, I've just been keeping my ear out about different Xbox-related news. The Xbox One X and the One S, all digital, are pretty much going to be discontinued ahead of the Series X release, which makes sense, I guess.
Yeah.
For those who don't know what kind of models those are, because that's a lot of naming conventions, it's simply just like if you bought the all-digital version of an Xbox console.
The disc driveless one.
What?
The disc driveless
box. Yeah. And
much like
just getting
Sony is doing with the PlayStation 5, there's going to be an all digital version.
Yeah, which makes sense. There's really no news there because, you know what? Whatever happens.
It's just worth mentioning. I just wanted to mention really quickly because I downloaded this before we started. I'm going to try and check it out and maybe talk about it next week.
Yeah.
Yarntown. This is out now and it's free. You can look it up pretty much anywhere. A fan created a recreation of Yharnam from Bloodborne, but in the style of top-down Zelda games.
Which looks just really cute and fun.
It looks adorable.
It's free, right?
Fun. It's free, yeah.
Yeah, so why not? You go give it a shot. I know CrossCode also, since it released on the Switch, it's getting a lot more buzz. It's well-deserved.
Now that it's all over.
That.
Also, it's on Game Pass for now, for people that don't know.
It is. Another Game Pass title. Play the game. It's long, but it's worth it. Speaking as somebody who has never even played it, it's long, but it's worth it.
I have heard that it is long.
I've watched it several times. I've seen the story several times. It's a lot of fun. It's going to be on my two playlist, assuredly, but I'm always going to plug it because I think it deserves some recognition.
I think so. Yeah. I'm going to get to it eventually also.
Yeah, I got it on the PC so long ago.
But just I'm going to get to all the Trails games eventually.
Wow.
That's 400 hours of games.
I was going to say that's a challenge.
I played the first two.
What?
I played the first two.
Yeah. No, I'm saying to beat all of them, that's a challenge.
Yeah. It's a challenge.
It's a lot. That's pretty much it, though. I really don't have a lot more news for anything else.
It was a light news day, so we knew the topic going in was going to be mostly what we played, because
we're not
actually.
Plus, I
want to
know more
games.
About ghosts, anyways. On my radar.
Yeah, so this became the episode of Tsushima.
Wow, Geckos of Tsushima.
That being said, with no other news on the docket, should we get the hell out of here?
I'm gonna get the hell out of here.
All right, housekeeping. Thanks to Ed for our intro. Thanks to Heather Ramos for our wonderful artwork. Ask us questions, geckogamespodcast@gmail.com, or ask us questions on Twitter where you can find us. I am @TheRichmeister0, and of course you can find Eric @Beautiful_Eric. Until next we meet, it's been our pleasure to serve you. Eric, thanks for hanging out.
I ain't serving anybody. I serve nobody but myself.
I serve justice.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, that too. All right, bye, everybody.
So long.